What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Soldier podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
What's up, brother?
Hey, man, I'm excited for another episode. We are down a member for this episode, but she will be returning in a future one.
Yeah.
I hope everybody has been enjoying Kayla being on the podcast. It's been a great time for us. We've definitely have increased our overall engagement on clips and stuff when it comes to some of the stuff she's been involved in. It's been really fun, like editing those videos and having stuff to post, and like having people that don't really like tune into our stuff, like, you know, comment and kind of laugh at, you know, some of the jokes that we have on the podcast. You know, I like my brother saw the first before I made the clip of like the blue box one, like the yeah. My cousin one. And I remember Zach, my brother, he saw it when I was making it, and he was like, you know, he's like, y'all gotta post that one. That one's really funny. So it's been cool developing like a bigger, like wider range of audiences because of those kind of jokes, Kayla. So, but we expected that. That's the thing.
Yeah.
we kind of expected that was gonna be the case. All right, so today is a big day for Zoe in particular.
Yes.
On a few different fronts. I'll talk about my experience a little bit later, but you could talk about yours. Go ahead and introduce today's topic.
Okay. Big topic, because it might be game of the year. Maybe not might, but like, I don't know. A lot of people are saying it could be. It's getting great reviews. Metaphor, or, you know, full title, Metaphor ReFantazio. I didn't know how to say that until I played the demo. But this game specifically has been in the works for, bro, I think Persona 5 came out 2017, and they've been working on this since before that.
Wow.
They have been working on this game for a long fucking time. For a while, it was just Project ReFantasy. For the longest fucking time. Fantasy. And it dropped, and I think it has a 94 on Metacritic, which is fucking crazy. It's I'm gonna talk about the game more, but like the first thing that pops out that really stuck out to me was there has been a weird shift. Well, not a weird shift, because I think it kind of, it's catered towards me and the type of games that I play, but there has been a shift in the gaming landscape where I feel like AAA studios are moving away from what they thought people wanted from Call of Duty. And this isn't me going like, ew, I hate Call of Duty. I mean, I played Call of Duty when it was big. But when Call of Duty first comes out, every fucking big studio was like, we need an online game. We need to make our game sustainable, I guess is the right word. And we need to make everyone play it longer.
Yeah.
And genuinely, like, without Call of Duty, we might have never gotten Fortnite. It's like a weird domino effect, right? Because Fortnite isn't Call of Duty. There's nowhere, it's not near Call of Duty, but it's that's where we ended up. We ended up in this era of live service games, and everyone decided to make a live service game. Fucking Sony was working on a Overwatch clone for 8 years because they thought, oh, that's where we're at, and that's what everyone wants, that's what everyone plays, just to drop it, and like a week later they closed the servers.
Yeah.
Because they took 8 fucking years, they waited way too fucking long, and now we're in a period of time where, dude, 8 years ago, Overwatch 1 game of the year. Last year, a fucking turn-based D&D game won game of the year.
Oh, Baldur's Gate, yeah.
Yes. And now, a turn-based traditional Japanese RPG is at least going to be nominated.
For
the,
sure.
The landscape of gaming has changed dramatically, and it's going in a direction that I like. Now, AAA studios, they make dumb decisions sometimes, so we'll see what they take from this, but I'm a very big turn-based RPG fan, and I hope other studios see how well Sega has been doing this year. Sega has dropped Yakuza, Persona 3, SMT5 Vengeance, and now Metaphor. They've dropped four critically acclaimed turn-based RPGs this year. And
that's crazy.
They've all sold a million copies. Metaphor had crossed a million copies the day it came out.
Yeah, I saw that. That was crazy.
That's nuts. That's nuts. If that doesn't show fucking Sony and any of these other AAA fucking studios, I love Square Enix, but for the longest time, they were like, we need to move away from turn-based. That's why all the Final Fantasies haven't been turn-based for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now Sega was like, actually, we're going to do it better.
I don't know. I think it's like, it's a weird situation when it comes to stuff like that, because I don't think that American AAA studios are ever going to venture into the realm of Japanese RPG adjacent type games. I just don't think it's going to, that's going to be the general consensus. Even though those games are very popular, like Metaphor, and we'll get into the gameplay and stuff, but like, it's a fun game. And for somebody like me, who, again, we have talked about this on the podcast several times, I'm not a turn-based JRPG player. Like, I'm not. Like, it's just not who I am as a gamer. More of a casual gamer, because I don't play video games that often. But, like, this just wasn't me. But, spoiler alert, I've been thoroughly enjoying playing Metaphor. And now, but I don't expect that to be the... For me, at least, that to be the norm, to where like if a AAA studio decided to come out with a JRPG style like game in American sense, I don't know if I'd be that inclined to play it.
Sure,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I to clarify, I don't think all AAA studios should make turn-based games, but I think there should be a shift from all these higher ups and CEOs being like, we need to be the next, for the longest time it was, we need to be the next Call of Duty, and then Fortnite dropped and it was like, we need to be the next Fortnite. Overwatch comes out, we need to be the next Overwatch. I just feel like not just turn the success of turn-based games this year, it's the success of just story mode games.
Yeah, okay.
And they should. And I feel like the higher ups should give these weird, like, I bet there are so many game pitches that we've never heard of that could be great, but CEOs and higher ups are like, let's make Concord.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like,
yeah.
So I hope that this opens their eyes to letting studios be creative. And this kind of also ties into like earlier this year when Microsoft closed Tango Gameworks after Tango Gameworks made Hi-Fi Rush, and the entire industry was like, wow, Hi-Fi Rush is one of the most creative and special games that has come out of Bethesda and Tango Gameworks, and I can't wait for the sequel, and I can't wait for the next Tango Gameworks game. And then Microsoft was like, actually, we're closing them. And it's like, dude, like, they have been behind Sony when it comes to exclusives. And they have said that. And they have said how they want to have more exclusives that kind of mean something. And that makes sense. They own the Xbox. They want people to have the Xbox. And then when they get an exclusive that everyone's talking about, I'm not a CEO, and I'll never think like one. I just don't understand that the gaming industry had a fear of, like, these new IP story mode games that they would rather just remake an old game or make an online shooter, give it a battle pass. Like, look, I'm part of the machine, right? I love Fortnite. I've been taking a break from it. But I do love Fortnite, so I get everyone wants a cash cow like that. I just wish for the past, I don't know how many years, these studios gave these game directors or these artists or like these game makers a little bit more creativity. And I hope that's where the gaming industry flows from here on out.
Yeah, that makes sense. You get, like, to your point about, like, exclusives. If you want exclusives, why do you get rid of the studios that could potentially make you better exclusives? Like, it just kind of, you're shooting yourself in the foot at that point, you know?
I feel like that goes into a different conversation, because Microsoft was really banking on Starfield being really fucking good. And then Starfield came out, and it was like, eh.
Oh, man.
But you can't close down that studio, because that's the studio that makes Skyrim and Fallout. Like, that's main Bethesda. So once they start losing money, they're like, well, we're going to close down the smaller one.
Right. I hope, honestly, the Starfield debacle, or whatever you want to call it, is like a come to Jesus moment for Bethesda, or at least this, like, that studio in general, because, like, I hate to say it, but, like, I hate to copy somebody else's lingo and phrasing, but Nakey Jakey's video on Starfield is literally just like the quintessential video when I look at games like Fallout, Skyrim, and Starfield. That they're, the way that those games have been created over time, have developed a cult following audience that is always going to be loyal. The problem is they look at all those games with rose tinted glasses when there's obviously glaring problems with them. And then nothing ever really gets changed or gets better because of those rose tinted glasses.
Correct.
And then now everybody's looking around like, why aren't AAA games better anymore? Why haven't a AAA studio like Bethesda come out with a good game in a while? It's because you guys don't actually try to be honest about how good or bad a game is.
Correct. You know? That's not to knock Skyrim.
No.
Because Skyrim's huge. Skyrim, when it came out, is like a marvel, right?
Yes, but how many remakes of Skyrim are we going to have?
Correct.
Before somebody goes, hey, isn't this just exploitation?
I mean, bro, they announced Elder Scrolls 6, I think, 3 years ago already, and we haven't heard an update.
Wow.
I don't know. I think Bethesda has really... This is not at all where I thought this conversation was going to go, but I I can talk about the gaming industry forever. Bethesda has lost a lot of good graces. Listen, I have a Switch and a PlayStation. I was never going to get Starfield. but I still wanted Starfield to be good.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these fucking PlayStation better, so only PlayStation be good. No. If a game is good, it's better for the gaming industry, just as in general. And I wanted Starfield to be good. It just, it's the same game, but it's in outer space. And then,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, higher ups in companies see that. And then it, like, in their head, it's like, see, story mode games do suck. It's like, well, no, just make a better game.
Right. Like, in Starfield or Bethesda, story mode games sit in like a weird gray area.
They're Western RPGs.
Yeah, like they're, yeah, like, yeah, like, well, WRPGs, if you want to call them that. But like, they sit in this weird gray area where the story is there, but there's a lot of other things involved that you have to do to get the full range of the story, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm, it's not just like a one-to-one. It's not like Ghost of Tsushima, where it's like a one-to-one storyline all the way through, and there's some smaller side quests in between. Like Fallout games are known for their like side quests that build out the actual story. And depending on how you go to like a certain faction or who you decide to talk to or save or kill, changes the story. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So like, it sits in this weird thing where the story itself is not just a one-to-one thing. Like, there's different ways you could kind of go about the story. So I know it's like trying to pinpoint, like, execs pinpointing Starfield not being good as like a red flag against traditional story mode games. I don't think that's very fair.
You know what's really interesting? Come on. The top games of like this year are either all Japanese games or indie games. It's a weird dynamic that I love, because I'm a huge defender of indie games.
Yeah.
And JRPGs are my favorite fucking genre of game. But like, I'm a Metacritic. Final Fantasy Rebirth is the number one on this list. I don't think, mm-hmm, it's gonna win Game of the Year. I mean, I liked it. I think I liked the first one better. If it wins Game of the Year, shit, good. That's a surprise for me, but I don't think it's gonna win, right, Game of the Year. Number two is Animal Well, from favorite of the channel here, Donkey, Big Mode Games.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's cool.
It's got a 91.
Hey, man, all the shit he was talking about video games probably paid off.
Yeah, man. Balatro, which is like that weird poker roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
You like roguelites. Have you tried it?
I haven't looked into it that much, but I think I might eventually. Well, I mean, I'm playing Metaphor now, so I have to like figure out.
You are gonna, for the next 80 hours of your video game life, you are not gonna go anywhere.
I know, for real.
Tekken 8 is the highest rated fighting game of the year.
I think it's, I don't know what it is about this Tekken specifically, but it looks like one of the, I guess all the good stuff about Tekken that they've done over the years is just all into this game specifically, and the people just for some reason love this game a lot. I think a lot of the memes had to do with it too. I think them having a big social media following and people making a lot more like memes and funny social media content about the game has definitely increased its popularity. Like the amount of like King, like on day one, King mixes or tweets or TikToks about King specifically, like it was all over my TikTok feed. I don't even like follow Tekken creators at all. Like, they was just all over my feed. So I think that was a big part of it. But I think this game just might have some kind of secret sauce that all the 10 games will have.
And then with an 89, fucking Like a Dragon, the turn-based one.
Yep.
Which I played 7. I really wanted to play 8. I just didn't have the time. That makes me so happy. I saw this tweet the other day where it was like, 2017 was this weird year where it was Persona 5 gets released, Yakuza 0 gets released, and it was a third game. I forgot which, but it was like these weird niche games that drop their best game to date, and now that they're huge franchises.
Yeah.
I think without the success of Persona 5, Metaphor wouldn't be as talked about.
Oh, for sure.
Because Metaphor is, for the longest time, I told you, you gotta try Persona 5. I know you don't like turn-based, but Persona 5 is different. You starting out with Metaphor, now it's almost the same. The combat, they've switched up a lot. Like in Persona 5, you can't. I really like in Metaphor that there's like this action RPG element that then takes you into turn-based.
Yes,
because that also opens the door up for like a big annoying thing. Not annoying, but it's kind of like a inconvenience for turn-based games is when you are super leveled up and you run into a weak enemy and it stops you in your tracks, and now you're in a turn-based arena and you kill him in one hit and you got to go through like the windscreen and the how much XP you've gotten. In Metaphor, if you're stronger than a creature, you hit it, it's done. It doesn't bring you into the arena. It stays an action RPG until you reach until you reach an enemy that's like your level or higher. And I love that. I love that. A lot of people will say this is a Persona clone. Even though it's made by the same fucking company, so that doesn't make sense. because of the way you can use magic in this game.
Yeah.
The heart thing, and then
Can I talk about that for a quick?
What's up? What's up?
So I'll kind of get into I'll get into a little bit more of my thoughts on the gameplay and stuff later when I thought about it. But I think that I'm fully aware of like Persona 5 and all that kind of stuff, and like the whole idea of the power system behind Persona 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought it was, I think I made the joke to you a few episodes back, like when we started talking about Persona, where I was like, the fact that they got to shoot themselves in the fucking head to get their Persona out is actually nuts.
That's specifically Persona 3.
Yes. And then I audibly when I forgot the dude character's name. Oh, what, like main character you play as, right? When he rips his heart out and he has this like metal heart, I go, oh fuck off. Oh, fuck, get out of here.
So I think with the way that these games go, by the end of the game, there is going to be a reason why you have a metal heart and why you talk into it.
Yes.
Because the whole thing with the Persona games was Persona 3, they're shooting themselves in the head because they have to face their death, their own death,
to get the Persona out.
In Persona 4, they all wear glasses. It's like special glasses where you can see through the fog in the Midnight Channel, and then they take them off so their Persona could come out, because it's something. Persona 4 is facing yourself. And that's why it's all these weird shadow versions of yourself that are like the parts that you don't like about yourself, which is why Persona 4 is a little bit problematic.
Yeah.
Where it's like when you meet the pop star, it's about how she's being sexualized at such a young age, which is kind of uncomfortable, but you're like, okay, I get the message. I get the messaging. And then you go to Kanji and his whole thing is like, I'm not gay. And it's like, okay, why is your dungeon a bathhouse with a bunch of naked guys? Yeah. And then you go, I forgot her name, but the detective character, that her whole thing is like, oh, people don't take me seriously because I'm not a guy, which again, the messaging is there, but her dungeon has like an operating bed. So it's like this weird trans allegory, but I don't think they really thought it through. I love Persona 4, but it gets a little weird. It gets like,
it gets
into territories where I don't think the writers were like fully
prepared to go into.
Correct. And then Persona 5, they have masks. And then they rip off their masks. When they first rip them off, it's like connected to their skin. So they start bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is face your tyrant. So it's like showing yourself to this evil person. And it's like, okay, yo, this is me. I'm not backing down. I don't need a mask.
Yeah.
I've played 7 hours of this game. I've been trying to piece together why the heart, and they're talking into the heart as a mic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to piece things together, but I don't have a theory right now.
Okay. So I guess now is a good time of any to talk about my first ever Atlas turn-based experience.
Hell yeah.
With Metaphor Refantasio. Now, I've only played the first 2 hours, 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because my brother's been playing Sparking Zero for 8 hours straight. and so I haven't had access to my PlayStation for a long, deep stretches of time. But obviously this channel and the podcast, I have mentioned several times that I'm not a big fan of turn-based games, partially because I think that they're too slow. I think that a lot of times, and kind of like how you talked about with like the leveling up process, or like you're over-leveled and you're in an area where you have to get somewhere, but those quick 2 to 3 minute battle arenas where you hit somebody, where you kill somebody in one hit, definitely takes a toll on the mental and adds to that runtime. I think a lot of times when in JRPGs, when you spend like 100 hours in a game, I want to say maybe 20 of those hours is you just fighting people that you're over leveled against.
That's fair.
So that was my biggest, like, I guess, aversion to turn-based games, which is I thought they were too slow. And so the first iteration of non-turn-based Final Fantasy games came out with Final Fantasy, what was it, 14?
No, 15. 14,
13? 15, 15, 15. When Final Fantasy 15 came out, I played that game. I think me and you played it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fun game. And then, like, obviously the remakes of Final Fantasy 7 and then Final Fantasy, 16 don't have turn-based?
16 doesn't have turn-based, yeah.
Doesn't have it either. And so that's a game that I've been meaning to get to, 16. It still has those turn-based elements with, like, giving people healing and doing, like, the limit breaks and doing the combos and doing the synchronized attacks and all this stuff like that. Like, you still have a turn
mm-hmm.
when fighting, especially in 15. You still have a turn, but the most part, you have the freedom to move around and fight like an action RPG. And that's why it kind of drew me to those types of games. And obviously you've been telling me forever, just play Persona, you're gonna be fine. So this time comes around and you're like, you sent me a tweet about people really liking the game, and I watched some gameplay of it and I'm like, it looks interesting. So I decided to end up buying the game, like, just whatever. And 2.5 hours in, I genuinely see the hype around turn-based game of that type.
Yeah.
Because the turn-based action is very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very, very, very quick. Like, you get the menu, You can choose what you want. Like, you, obviously, you can take your time choosing your attack and like strategize and stuff. But it's just like you click, you hit it. It happens next turn immediately. It's not like anything where like the old Final Fantasy games where like you attack and then you come back and then the next person's over. Then they go through a whole little thing and then they attack and they come back. Like those they pass the runtime again because of how the turns work.
Also,
this one's super quick.
A very small detail that people don't really notice because it's just designed so well. The menu isn't something where you scroll down and pick what you want. It's every button is mapped to something. So instead of like scrolling down to magic and then picking your spell, it's you press triangle, then you pick the spell, and it shaves down maybe milliseconds, but that adds up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because like you can hit square and just go attack with your sword, or you hit triangle and then you can pick magic. And then after you get done with your turn, then your partner, whoever's in your party, their attacks are quick. It's not like they're like, next is their turn, and then it goes to another screen, and then it goes to their face and they attack. It's like, no, as soon as you get done, your partners jump in immediately. I thought that was really, really cool. One thing I will say that was kind of not irking me, but was kind of just like something that I didn't like too much was the fact that I really spent like 45 minutes to an hour of my playtime not doing a fucking thing.
Yeah. I played the demo. I have the full game. But the demo is the first few hours. Specifically this game, there was a point in time where I think where your character's having a conversation with Galica, and they're about to enlist into the military.
Yes.
I was sat back in my chair and I was like, I haven't done anything in a minute. where I'm at towards I had finished the demo. Towards the end of the demo, it's the first dungeon. And in the dungeon it's just all action. I guess specifically, I mean, RPGs are a lot of cutscenes usually. Yeah. And I think this one was just telling people, like, just explaining the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And it wasn't like I was, like, mad about, like, oh, my God, they're not letting me play the game. I was like, man, it's been a minute, and I haven't really done anything. Like, I thought at one point I would learn the attack and battle style when you have to run through that desert and there's all those like monsters and stuff around. I thought at that point I was like, oh, I might run into some encounters and like learn how to fight, but no, they're like, hey, just run away from them.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I guess.
Yeah.
But one thing, and you kind of alluded to it too, with the action RPG style of play, where in the same vein of like a Sekiro, where you could like shave down a significant amount of the battle if you just jump in and like attack them from behind with like a sneak attack. So then I would find myself in situations where I attack from behind, then I get my own attack on top of that, and then they don't attack because they're stunned, and then I can just kill them. So the battles take super short.
Yeah.
Even though like the enemy I'm fighting is on my level, you know what I'm saying? So I think it kind of picks my like action RPG brain a little bit, where I could just go in and attack first, and then it gives me the turn-based the main gameplay. But but overall, like, I'm genuinely enjoying it for sure.
So like I said, I always thought a good starter would be Persona 5, but this is even better because it's very similar, but instead of a creature capture game, because the whole thing about Persona is your main character can use different personas. You can capture personas and just use them, like Pokemon, but it's, you know, for your magic attacks. This one specifically, you haven't gotten this far, but like no story spoiler, but this game is a classic JRPG job system where instead of getting all these different personas and now you have 100 different spells to choose from, you change your job. And like right now, my main character, he went from seeker and I changed him to healer because I don't have a real healer yet, so I just wanted him to learn all the, at least a healing spell.
Yeah.
And then what you can do is if you level up your rank in healer, you can go back to seeker or warrior or anything else and pick at least one spell that you learned from healer.
Oh.
So if you rank up your jobs, you get more benefits from those jobs.
Oh, so it's more of an incentive to like try to do other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And like the trade-off is, or not a trade-off, but like the benefit is when you pick the job you actually want, some of the things, the abilities you had in other jobs that you learned, you could keep.
And
that's pretty good. I like
and
that.
And the best thing about it is to unlock those jobs, yes, you have to go to a special, you have to talk to someone. And then they unlock it for you. But once you've unlocked the jobs, if you're in the middle of a dungeon, you just go to equipment and switch the job.
Okay.
And now you're, cause like, I forgot his name. Stroll. Have you met Stroll yet?
Yeah, I met Stroll.
Okay. So right now Stroll is warrior, which is what he is when you meet him, and brawler. Yeah. I change him to a brawler as well because he's pretty strong. And in the middle of this dungeon that I'm at, you start fighting skeletons. And skeletons are resistant to slashing damage, but they're weak to pummel damage. So I switched him from warrior to brawler in the middle of the dungeon. And now him punching is their weakness.
Oh, okay.
So just the way this game is designed so far is super up my alley. Like, it's so fucking fun for me.
It's so what it gives you the kind of same feeling that maybe not as like a Fire Emblem kind of gave you with like more strategic options, right? Okay, yeah, that's cool. I haven't got that. I think I just got done with that first battle against. Oh, that's a great segue. The world building in this game is awesome.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The world building in this game is awesome. And like it's and specifically it picks my, and ironically enough, I'm wearing like an Evangelion t-shirt. It picks my anime brain because of the fact of how they set up some of the monsters and who you fight in this game. And you know, you have like the species that are usually involved with like the pointy ears. Or you got the little horn things, or you don't have those at all. You got like the heterochroma, I guess. And you're like a fallen race that got wiped out, right? But the monsters that you fight are actually called humans.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, really cool. And obviously the first human you fight is obviously a nod to like, it has to be a nod to Adam and Eve or some kind of form of Christianity.
Yeah, because of the apples.
Because there's no way it's not. Like the way it's set up with like the cuts on its arms, how it's designed, how it looks like a biblically accurate angel with like the wings on the side, and then plus like it has the apple like vines with the apples growing, and then it eats the apples to like regenerate health. Right. When I saw that, I think one, referring to them as humans is cool as fuck. I think that's like a cool like reverse on how I guess the like mortals in fantasy are perceived in when it comes to fiction. I think that's a really cool addition. Plus, I just think they look really cool and they looked like angels from Ava. Like it reminded me of looking at some of the angels in Ava that you fight. The Shinji and Asuka fight, and it was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is gonna be a fire game.
what's really like piqued my interest early on was they're really making a big deal about what fantasy is considered.
Yeah.
All Persona and Shin Megami Tensei games before this, they're like kind of modern. And if they're not modern, they're like a few years behind. Like Persona 3 takes place in 2009. Fucking Persona 5, the way you go into the metaverse is an app. Like they're modern games. But this one is, since the start, it's been called Project ReFantasy. And now it's in the fucking name, ReFantazio. And the book that your character carries in their world is a fantasy book, but it explains a world that sounds like ours.
Yeah.
Granted, they said there's no racism, there's no fighting. We're not there.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's, and when they show you the drawings,
there's like skyscrapers and cars and people walking around. Yeah.
And in early in the game, you definitely haven't seen this, but early in the game, they ask you your name. And then when you create your character, they ask you, what are you going to name your character?
Yeah.
There's something that I've seen that's already brought that in.
Really?
To the world building.
Okay, that's cool.
And I'm like, what? Like I'm trying to piece shit together. I've only played 7 hours. I don't know what the fuck the ending. Bro, it's a JRPG. You start off with like find this person's cat, and then you end up killing God. Like that's what JRPGs do. So I wouldn't be able to guess the ending, but I'm super interested in what they're trying to do with this game.
Yeah, for sure. And then obviously me as somebody that likes to develop theories about games and develop my own interpretation of storylines, I think that one, the spoilers for the game for those that haven't played it, right? Just make sure you're skipping around a little bit. But the guy that killed the king early in the story, like basically who kicked off the story. Yeah, Luis. I feel like, and this is my personal like theory, I feel like he's responsible for maybe the humans or the monsters.
Uh-huh.
I think he's responsible for that in some capacity. And then like he's going to be like a Sephiroth situation where when you fight him in the very end of the game, he actually turns into one of those things and he's like becomes like unfucking beatable.
So he's very much like, he's depicted almost holy. He's very pale. He's wearing all white. He almost glows. He looks like a more exuberant. Is that the word I'm looking for? Extravagant Griffith.
Yeah, you use those words correctly.
Yeah. He looks like a way out there Griffith. And they'll probably set something up where he's like the perfect human or something like that.
For sure. Yeah. Like the way they were glazing him so crazy when they were introducing him, like one of the, at the age of three, was on the level of an archmage. I was like, yeah. Get the fuck. I was like, you're just setting him up to be a villain. Like just say he's the bad guy. Just come on. You already know.
You just reminded me of something that I really like about this game compared to the Persona games. Listen, I am a Persona fan. So, you know, in those games, you get to romance people. And I'm not going to be that guy where it's like, I'm not going to do this. This is weird. I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
There's one girl character I like. I'm going to romance her. Or my first playthrough in Persona 5, where I romanced, I think, 5 of them. And then Valentine's Day came around and they all got mad. It's pretty funny, actually. This game, there's no romancing, which I think is just kind of like, it gives you more time to focus on everything else. It gives you more time to focus on ranking up your your bonds, your regular bonds, just because you're not focused on like, I need to get this girl to like me. One. Two, because there's no romancing, at least from what I've seen, they don't glaze the fuck out of you. In Persona, in Persona, you are this cool, quiet, mysterious type, and up, and now you're good at everything. You're so strong, so you gotta be the you have to be the captain. No one else can use multiple personas. You're so cool. Once you like rank up romances, it's like these girls can't get enough of you.
Yeah,
and like I said, it's a video game. I'm gonna have fun with it, but there is a point where I'm like, bro, like, this is unrealistic. Like, what the fuck am I? Like, I start feeling like a fucking creep.
Yeah.
So far in Metaphor, you're getting shit talked left and right.
Yeah, honestly.
Because it seems like they're racist to your tribe.
Yes. Yes, they are. It made me laugh just because it was just like kind of out of nowhere. But when you're in that first little like fighting arena and you have to find the dead soldiers and you walk up to one of them and they go, I'm about to die. And the last person I see is an Elder. I was like, that's so crazy. I was like, that's nuts, dude. Like, but yeah, I do think it's interesting because that was one of the things that I was going into this game wondering like, oh, what are the relationship bond situations going to look like? Because obviously you see in other games like Fire Emblem, even like Danganronpa, like you have certain like modes of the game where you're developing relationships, developing like potential like love interests. Like obviously in Dangan, there's only like one true like love interest in each of the three games, but you have like the romance elements with other ones. And they don't have it in this one. And while I do think it's fine, I'm not an issue. I am a little bummed because you can't romance the one dark skinned character in the game.
Yeah.
Because she's awesome. I love her.
I sent a tweet to you and I even said like, I don't think they did this on purpose. It just doesn't look good that the one game where everyone's an adult that you've made. You
can't romance.
This is the first game they've made since Catherine, which, again, friend of the show. We've talked a lot about Catherine here. Yeah. This is the first game since Catherine that you're playing as adults and you can't romance anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't think they did it on purpose. I just don't think they thought that through either.
Mm-mm. It's like an eyebrow raiser, but not like crazy enough for you to be like, yo, Atlas, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because, like I said, or to continue what you said, the artist, it's the same artist for all the Persona games and Catherine. His name is Shinigori Sojima. He popped the fuck off with this game, man.
Man.
They let him do different races because, you know, the other games, it's like it's all Japan. But yeah, dude, that the dark, she runs the Igniter store.
Yep.
She's black with white hair. Dude, she looks fucking sick. My favorite character so far is Katarina. You haven't met her yet. She's the pink paripus. She's a rabbit person.
Okay.
Unfortunately, she's hot.
Unfortunately, she's hot. Yeah, I think the designs are awesome. Like, speaking on, they haven't given the Igniter merchant or owner of the store a name, have they?
Not yet. Not even where I'm at. Because something that carried over from Persona, but you level it up in a different way, are these the social stats?
Mm-hmm.
In Persona, it's always charisma, courage, and academics. In this one, it's bravery, which is courage,
mm-hmm.
there's like five. There's eloquence, intelligence, which those are like the three from Persona. Imagination, which ties into this whole like the fantasy thing.
Fantasy thing, yeah.
And I forgot the fifth. Not constitution, but it's similar to constitution. It's we'll call it constitution.
Yeah.
And you do side quests to raise those things. And where I'm at right now, she has a side quest for me, but I need to raise my intelligence to get that side quest.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
So I don't know her real name yet.
Yeah, I heard it when she walked up the first time. I was like, oh my god, she's so sick. Like I'm always a sucker for a character that wears their jacket without putting their arms through the sleeves.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
Like that vibe is just awesome to me. And then, like, she reminds me of, do you remember that one black character from Arcane?
Yeah,
the one on like the council. Like they look very similar to me, and I was like, they their designs, both of them, are super super dope. But yeah, I think it's the non-romance element is definitely an eye raiser, but not something where it's like where you're just like, okay, Atlas, like you guys are acting real, real weird. but I mean, because you think about the Persona romance, you can romance your teacher as a minor in one of those games.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what makes it worse?
What?
The first dungeon in Persona 5 is you taking down a teacher because he's physically abusing and sexually assaulting kids. Yeah. So in the first hour of the game, you're like, ah, oh, teacher bad. And then later on, there's a very famous meme where it's it's the coach and Joker, and Joker's pissed off. And he's like, you're such a sick piece of shit. And then it's your teacher and Joker, and Joker's like, who need their teacher C8? Like,
that's so... Oh my god, bro. I just remember the Giguk meme where it was like, the teacher was like, oh, you're too young for me, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, oh, what was the line? Because it was in response to literally like the domestic girlfriend.
Oh god,
like, age gap thing.
Oh god,
I can't remember the meme, but it was so fucking funny. But yeah, so if you have not played Metaphor, please go play it. Because as somebody that doesn't like or has not liked turn based games in the past, I think this is definitely one if you want to jump in. And start your journey on turn-based game. I think this is a good like jumping off point.
And if you're the type of person who like scours Wikipedia until like 3 a.m., I would look into the history of the development of this game. It's very interesting. Like one of the characters you meet, the red-haired elf, her name's Hulkenberg. And in early concept art for Project ReFantasy, she was like center of attention. So it's almost like she was going to be the main character, and then they relegated her to a side character. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
That's cool. All right. I'm going to keep this really brief. This next segment, I'm going to keep it as brief as possible because I don't want to talk about it for too long. But last episode was obviously called Uzumaki on Kid Pix. Okay. About the how do you say the letdown that was the discrepancy between episode one of Uzumaki and episode two.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And how they changed studios midway through, and finding out more information on it, it just kind of seemed like that one studio that did episode one was tasked with something, and I guess some kind of negotiations on how it was going to finish fell through. I saw something where it was like the guy, somebody that was working on the show tweeted, he was like, it was either we give the product as is, or like work through episodes and just get all four of them out. We only produce the first episode and then probably never come back to it ever again, or we just completely scrap it. Like, those are the three options. It was continue it badly, only have episode one, or just not do it. And I think that's it kind of speaks to a larger topic on issues in the Japanese anime and anime industry when it comes to workload and employee health and like how those studios keep trying to churn out stuff that's going to make them money, and how they're very tough on deadlines. So then you end up getting really bad episodes. And unfortunately, it's happened to way too many shows recently to where like, you can't really make that many jokes about it because it's just like a serious issue. Like, these people are getting really overworked. But man, the latest victim that this has happened to, and I don't know if it's like a work of like, if it's like a toxic work environment issue with the studio, or they're just saving all their money up for later episodes. But Blue Lock has gotten hit with the PowerPoint slideshow treatment.
No, like Record of Ragnarok.
No. Well, not that bad. not as bad as Record of Ragnarok, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, one of the biggest people loves Blue Lock in season one, right? But there was a little bit of talks behind like the criticism of it, and shout out to this girl Chris, I forgot her full Twitter handle, but she basically talked about how every time, even in season one, there are times where it would make a cut or cut away from action or wouldn't show that much movement for big, large chunks of the runtime, even during like action sequences, right? Like, every time somebody would get a touch on the ball, it would just make a cut where it was like a freeze frame of them like handling it and not really moving that much. Or it would just do like some kind of effect to make it seem like they were moving really quick across the field. Or they would do this weird wide bird's eye view angle shot where like the CG, obviously looking CG characters would start running across the field. But it definitely halted some action scenes, right? And I googled
Blue Lock season 2 animation, and one of the first things I see is PNG Lock is here.
PNG, dude, no, because there's a clip. I might make a clip out of this, but there's a part in episode 2 where Chigiri comes through and saves like a cross or something, and it dead ass looks like they took a PNG of him kicking the ball and slid that shit across the fucking screen.
No way. Come on, man.
Dude, it was so funny, dog. I was crying. I'm like, bro, what happened? Like, every time somebody like gets a touch on the ball, like it just stops, or a freeze frame to show them like with the ball. And I'm just like, they have more. Someone tweeted they have more frames in an anime than the manga itself.
God. Come on. I was
like, that's crazy. Like,
who's the animation studio for Blue
Lock? It's not Madhouse. I don't know if it's Bones.
Studio 8-Bit? What have they done? Studio 8-Bit will be handling the animation production for season 2.
Mm-hmm. Who's doing season 1? I think it was Bones. It had to be Bones.
Let me see if I can find it.
Because
8-Bit Studio nailed. Oh no, they did season 1 too. I don't know why. Yeah. Fucking Google AI. They like, you could have told me that Studio 8-Bit just did both seasons.
Yeah. Okay, so 8-Bit does a pretty decent job with season one. Still a little slideshowy in some areas, but definitely have some moments where there's good animation. This second episode of season two is just PNGs and slideshows everywhere. Mm. And that's not fair. But part of me feels like, okay, this is not the real... This is not where the real budget's going to start coming in. Because where they are in the story, in Blue Lock, a bunch of finalists have made it. And now Blue Lock, some of the best players from Blue Lock are trying to compete to be on a team that's going to go play a game against the Japanese U20 team. Okay. That's where it is right now. So like where they're starting is the game happens a little bit later in that arc specifically, but they have to have the preface episodes to get to the point where the U20 is starting.
Uh-huh.
So if it's just a slideshow for like maybe two or three episodes, and then the rest of the season is like great animation because of the U20 game.
Sure.
I'd understand.
Uh-huh.
However, if this is not.
Yeah.
That's a big wasted opportunity. And I don't understand how you could go from having a solid season one with the same studio, mind you. A solid season one and then not following up on that success with great animation, if not better.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Same thing with like Tower of God. And I hate that happened to Tower of God because that was supposed to be the webtoon adaptation that stood above the other ones to show that a webtoon anime adaptation could be good. Now, Solo Leveling is definitely aiding in that process a little bit. I know you don't like it.
I've only seen episode one. I'll give it. It's just episode one was really corny. Maybe it's corny on purpose. It's corny on purpose.
It's literally just like, turn your brain off, watch guy get super OP. It's really nothing else behind that. But Solo Leveling, I guess for those that have seen it, or like people that do like it, it's definitely doing a decent job in, you know, showing people that a webtoon adaptation could still be as good as a manga adaptation, right? The problem is Tower of God, because God of High School was bad.
Ooh,
not because the animation sucked, because they skipped 200 chapters or something like that.
Why do they do that?
I don't understand. I don't either. And then like Noblesse was another one where like you gotta think like Tower of God, Noblesse, and God of High School, three of the biggest webtoons ever. Two of the three of them, God of High School and Noblesse, were two of the biggest, like, webtoon app, like the app Webtoon,
mm-hmm.
two of the biggest titles on that platform.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? God of High School basically skips, not 200 chapters, it skips, like, maybe at least 30, because I read it around the time it was airing.
Mm-hmm.
They skip so many chapters that would give you so much context on what was actually happening in the world building. So by the time you get to the final episode of that season where Jin Mori turns into Sun Wukong, you actually know why he turns into Sun Wukong. Mm-hmm. But you don't get the reference of Sun Wukong and who he is as the person if you skip 50 chapters in between.
Yeah.
And then Noblesse was just like the same thing where they just skipped around a lot and the animation wasn't great. So it just kind of got scrapped or everybody kind of just forgot about it. But
I have never heard about it. So
yeah, but Tower of God started out amazing and it was really, really good to start. And then you get this new arc and you get the same thing. Dog, that clip of the main character dodging these PNG like lightning bolts going past his face. Bro, I was like, what happened? I don't understand.
I think this, it goes back to what you said earlier, where it's like the working conditions for specifically like Japanese animators is not the best.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know where to begin to even say like, oh, maybe because the studio said this, or I just feel like most of these people, especially on shows that start off really well,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they're forced to do that, whether it's money or the higher ups or something. They're like pushed into a corner where it's like, well, I wanted to draw the lightning bolt, but now I just gotta make this PNG slide.
Yeah. I mean, what I had researched and like heard about when about animation and budgeting costs, right? Is that obviously certain shows cost money per frame. In some situations, if you want to make a certain frame or do certain cuts to a frame, it's going to cost a lot of money. Like maybe like a 5-second clip. Like when they do those fucking they're cool. Like the frame shots in between impact frames the new One Piece episodes.
Yeah.
Like those cost a lot of fucking money. Like,
yeah, I bet. You know what I'm saying? But it's also Toei Animation that they have
money to burn, you know?
Yeah.
So you might get in situations where certain frames cost X amount of dollars and you might not have the funds to do those frames efficiently.
Yeah.
So you might have to cut a corner and like throw some PNGs in there, like have some people staying still. You may have to pull a Gurren Lagann and run the same clip 8 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on top of all that, you get that plus the really rough working conditions, and it just doesn't make for a great. And then you get the expectations of the higher ups in that studio that have an unrealistic deadline for when something needs to be released, and so all that gets jumbled up into your favorite anime having a bad adaptation for a season 2, and it sucks.
Yeah,
it really does suck.
I never want to put it on the animators,
never,
unless it comes out where it's like, oh, these animators actually didn't work well. But yeah, even then, like, who can we trust?
Mm-hmm.
We won't know unless we're in the fucking studio. But I never want to be like, wow, these animators got lazy, because that is, you know, again, we always talk about it. Twitter fans,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they tweet before they think, just for engagement. And I have seen a lot of people where it's like, oh, these animators. Where it's like, oh, okay, it could be the studio. It could be the higher ups of the studio. It could be the fact that they didn't get money, that they forced them into a crunch. That, like, I never want to. Same thing with like a bad video game. It's like, these people's hearts were in the right mind. They didn't want to make this. They didn't want Uzumaki season episode 2 to look like that, but they were forced into that position.
Right. Like, you bring it back to video games, like those people at Concord worked so hard on that game.
Yeah,
I know they did. And then just because of like trends and how the actual timeline got mismanaged, there's a lot of mismanagement on that part. I feel like the people that actually worked on the game, that created the elements and had the gameplay and stuff like that, I feel like they put their all into it just for it not to get really, you know, paid off the way they wanted it to.
Yeah. So, I feel really bad for the studio. I hope the studio bounces back. I just and when I say the studio, I mean the developers and the game artists and mm-hmm. the UI artists, like that part. Because the higher ups of Sony, they'll be fine. If Concord doesn't make money, Venom 3 is gonna make money. They're fine.
They're going to be perfectly fine. But yeah, I thought that was crazy how another adaptation bit the dust when it comes to this a second season follow up, or like a big fan favorite follow up. Like, because everybody was so with Uzumaki again, everybody was so hyped up on that first episode, just for episode two to not have the same flair. And I get it, you know, like trying to replicate Junji Ito's work is hard. It's so detailed. It's so, you know, saying there's a reason why not many people have been able to do it on screen, because on paper it's horrifying on paper, you know. But yeah, like episode one did a great job with it, and then you just get to episode two and you're like, oh man, what happened? You know what I'm saying? You just gotta just really confused and kind of, you know, discouraged as somebody that was a fan of Jujutsu's work and just the show in general after seeing episode one too. So yeah, that was my that was my topic of the day.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
Not really. I'm liking Dandaran, but we want to talk about that with Kayla.
Yeah, so because she just watched the first two episodes. Probably when we record tomorrow probably.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I've seen fucking the Dragon Ball Daima insanity has already dropped on Twitter.
What is that?
Like, no one can just defend their anime normally. I saw something where it was a screenshot of Daima, and I think it was like a One Piece account was like, all they tweeted was like, oh, Daima came out. And then the original poster replied and said, yeah, it fucking came out, you fucking idiot. Like, along those lines. And it was like, if you're going to insult Daima, just go back to watching One Piece. And it was like, he just asked if it was out yet.
Like, what did he say fuck me for? Like, what are we talking about?
It's the weirdest shit. I do it to myself, you know? I spend so much time on Twitter, and I'm always talking about, like, everyone on here sucks, and I don't delete the app.
Leave the app.
I get so much of my news from there, I can't.
No, fair enough. I do, too. Like, it's hard to get away from that app, because I get a lot of other stuff from there that I want to go see. But,
mm-hmm.
All right. Well, a little bit shorter of an episode, probably by what, like 15 minutes?
Yeah.
But it's fine. Yeah, so as far as our episodes, I don't know which one is going to go first. Might be this one, and then the one with all three of us might be next week's episode.
Yeah.
Because we got some people out of town.
Kayla and I are going to Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween. Well, I'm going to Horror Nights on Thursday.
Yeah.
So I'm hype as fuck for that.
Yeah. So it'll be... So we'll have like some pre-recorded episodes that we can drop on you guys, and that way we can keep the train moving. I appreciate everybody that's commented and like reached out and shared our stuff. Like, I really appreciate that. Like, those that are listening.
If you're listening to us on a podcast app, whatever you do, I don't know, rate us and then leave a review.
Right. Leave a five star.
I don't know. I'm trying to be Mr. Influencer here. Hopefully this helps.
Because we really want to see where this might go. You know, it's been a fun three years we've been doing this.
Two. Yeah. Yeah.
And then now that we have added Kayla, who's, you know, done some content creation in a while, I think we have a new element that can help us, you know, get to where we probably could get to. I think we have a good thing going here. So if you like us, rate us, share us. You know what I'm saying? Go follow us.
If you're watching on YouTube, explain in the comments how much of an idiot I am for defending the small guy, huh? Defend the CEO, why don't you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we want to see the bootlickers in the comments immediately. All right. Well, that's been everything for me. I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Astro by Zoe. See you guys next time.